The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
Yitadav yikadash mein rabba Ve'yolma divrach irutei ve'yamnich emakutei Ve'chayechol ve'yom echon Ve'chayein lechol mei Yisrael Pagala uvizman kariv.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I am your host, Herschel Finman. We are in the middle of Zman Simcha Seina, the time of our rejoicing. It's the holiday of Sukkot, and we're just really happy about it. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are just having more fun than we really should be at this point. This half hour of the show, we'll be featuring an interview with former Detroiter Miriam Karp, also known as Miriam Dreiker Karp, and she wrote a book called Painting Zeta's Dream, Memoir of a Searching Soul. It's actually a very good book. You want to know, she's a brilliant person. You're going to want to listen to this interview, folks. We have an eclectic assortment of really good music for you, of course, all of it Jewish. There, we mentioned in passing that a couple of weeks last, that there's no portion of the week because the holiday usurps the portion of the week. This week, folks, we have two portions of the week. We are ending the five books of Moses with the portion of Bracha, which is in Deuteronomy 35, and we're beginning on Saturday with Genesis 1:1, right from the beginning again. And we're going to talk about that and what that means to you. And of course, we have an awesome story at the end. You want to stay right to the end, to the final goodbyes. Before we do anything else, though, let's go right to the news. Egyptian Air Force jets were seen circling the northern Sinai. Explosions were heard as the Egyptian military continued its anti-terrorist operations against groups in Sinai. Atris Hussein, a Swedish national, was found guilty of possession of 3 tons of bomb-making materials in Thailand. Hussein was arrested in January after the Mossad told Thailand of a planned terrorist attack during the new year. He was sentenced to 4 years for illegal armament possession, but will only have to serve 2 years after the prosecution failed to convince judges of his connection to Hezbollah. President Obama will meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House next week to discuss the peace talks with the Palestinians and developments in Syria. Mr. Netanyahu will be in town for the General Assembly of the UN. A historic conference in support of Jewish settlements in the West Bank took place in the European Parliament, which is a leader in the Boycott Israel movement. The conference was organized by the deputy chairman of the European Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee, Dr. Fiorella Provera of Italy, who became a supporter of the Jewish communities after touring Samaria. Nearly 3,000 Africans were released from Israeli prisons after Israel Supreme Court unanimously ruled that they could not be held simply because they were immigrants. The illegals now have a choice of voluntarily leaving Israel or being deported to Uganda. The Israel Defense Forces will remove soldiers from 22 towns near the borders with Lebanon, Sinai, and Gaza. Border security, such as electronic sensors and lookout posts, relieve the need for having soldiers inside the community. So, like everything else, people are getting being replaced by machines. 25 members of Congress and members of Parliament from around the world visited Israel during the holiday of Sukkot. The special 2-day trip included discussions of the newly imposed European Union boycott and tours of Jerusalem and the West Bank. And finally, the Forbes list of the wealthiest Americans came out this week. Jews on the list include Larry Ellison of Oracle in third place, Michael Bloomberg 10th, casino mogul Sheldon Adelson 11th, Sergey Brin of Google 14th, George Soros 19th, Mark Zuckerberg 20th, Microsoft's Steve Ballmer at 21st, and about 30 others. The richest Jew in Michigan is Alfred Taubman at 201st. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start. Why go anywhere else when you could go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of kosher wines in Michigan. One Stop Kosher has the freshest produce, the best dairy, deli, and meats, their gourmet. They even have a kosher bakery right on the premise. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line Miriam Karp, who has written a memoir called Painting Zeta's Dream, Memoir of a Searching Soul. How are you today, Miriam?
Good morning. I'm fine, Rabbi Finman. How are you?
Good. Thank God. Thank God. We're doing well. We're into the sukkah spirit of things and having a blast and a ball. You've written a memoir, and the interesting is the time frame of it. It seems a little bit like a awakening that people are now beginning to write historical things about things that I can remember. You know, so it's like, for some people, it's
When you see kids wearing peace signs, you're kind of like, that's not supposed to be, a historic thing. I was there. That means I'm historic, right?
Right. Yes. Well, I have a friend who says, if you can remember the 60s, you weren't there. So, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. So let's talk about the general epic of the time period, the late 60s, early 70s, as to why people would be interested in hearing the thoughts of a person who was living through and trying to survive through that time period, Miriam Karp.
Well, you know, I think a lot of things that for whatever reason were very, very strong and kind of fermenting them have really trickled into general society. I was thinking about this last night, the whole idea of speaking about spirituality, growing up in the suburban 60s, that just wasn't the only time I had ever heard the word spiritual was in terms of black spirituals. It just wasn't part of the common culture or vernacular. And holistic health, a lot of things, mind-body connection, a lot of things that were really revolutionary then have trickled into our general culture and are still issues that are very important and hopefully a little more accessible to people than they were then. I kind of at that time felt like I had to go into this very extreme search and lifestyle to even find people that were talking, that were, you know, thinking in those terms.
Okay. Now, when people write a memoir, they think they have a story that people want to hear. What do you feel is unique about your travels and travails that would warrant people to read about them?
Good question. I guess when I was, I've all these years since then, there were certain just kind of some funny, some very poignant, some kind of unique and we would call coincidence or divine providence in the way things lined up, which, you know, I kind of always thought, this is a story. There's that aspect of it. There's just a lot of funny and unique, you know, circumstances, and I think people relate to the inner drama of someone who's really searching and compelled. And at the time, I just felt very driven. I didn't even really understand what was driving me. There's also the aspect which doesn't change with the times of a young person growing up and trying to just figure out what does being Jewish mean and what does having a Jewish identity mean and does it mean anything? Is it relevant? Is it a fossil? Is it just nostalgic? What does this all mean, and what could it add to my life? So all those things come to bear in the story, but it's also just fun and humorous and down to earth, and it's sometimes, you know, poignant or a little teary. You know, I go through my parents' passing and different issues of family and endurance and combining different cultures and trying to make it work. My family grew up in a different kind of, I was raised in a kind of culturally different Jewish atmosphere than the one that I live in now, but trying to bridge those gaps, trying to find connections, you know, with people who are living different lifestyles, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I'm the sixth of seven children, and growing up in the 60s, my older siblings were always having friends over, and the buzz phrase identity crisis was what I was raised with. Why is that person doing that strange sort of thing that person is doing, or that unusual? They're having their identity crisis. And so in my family, for example, we had a Buddhist, we had a macrobiotist, we had a hippie rabbi. And a person got involved with Christianity, and a person who, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's me and my little sister, you know, and the whole business over here. So we all went through our identity crises. So talk about this idea of people trying to find an identity. And do you think people that are in their adolescence are still doing the identity crisis scene?
You know, it depends on the individual. I have, thank God, a large family, and my kids are range from young teens through to, you know, pretty settled adults. And I do have some kids who really did seem. I have one who actually, as of this morning, my husband and I were discussing this child's identity crisis. So some people just kind of seem to sail through and, you know, glean from the good from what their parents gave them and the culture around them. And some people just seem to really need to chew it out and own it on their own and, you know, figure it out and don't want to take anything for granted. And it just seems like a very individual thing. But I definitely, as I say, I can speak for my family, do have children, even though they're raised with more traditional values and a more encompassing lifestyle, still have that need to just chew it up for themselves and figure it out for themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you don't see anything usual with the baby boomers or the way that the parents of the baby boomers related with their kids, these crazy kids?
I don't know if maybe a higher percentage of people had. There definitely seemed to be a certain historical force that just kind of swept through the 60s where a lot of people, you know, it was reflected in the music and so forth. But it seems like it still goes on, you know. I don't know if to the same extent, but, you know, like it is to a certain extent a cultural thing, but a certain extent a very personal thing. You know, there's that kind of just your own quiet self in the middle of the night, and you're just kind of trying to figure out who am I and what am I doing here and what's it all about. And, you know, some people just seem to have to go through that, and some just kind of glide on through, you know, and seem to not have to wrestle with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, our guest this morning is Miriam Karp. She's written a book called Painting Zeta's Dream. Zeta means grandfather in Yiddish. Memoir of a Searching Soul. Okay, would you describe
Rabbi
your...
Simon, I'm just going to intervene here in Detroit. I'm going to throw my maiden name in there because I might have some old friends out there or friends of my family.
I should call you Miriam Dreiker Karp then, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Would you say, you know, when people associate, like, I'm rebelling against their parents is because they feel that they didn't have, like, a proper upbringing, a childhood was lacking. How would you describe your childhood, Miriam Dreiker Karp?
Okay. You know, I've thought about that a lot because I do kind of wake up and look around at, you know, I went to Berkeley High, I went to University of Michigan, I went to Camp Tamarack. I, you know, lived a fairly typical childhood of my times, and my parents were very engaged and concerned to give us all the right formative experiences, and they did. And I don't feel like I had one of these, you know, kind of memoirs that you want to write a childhood about how I survived my abuse of this or whatever. And so, but I do feel, and not at all consciously, I mean, I think my parents were giving me the best that they could from their perspective, but I feel like, at least for me, growing up without any kind of sense of spirituality was something that left me really bereft. And I hesitate to say that because I know that there's a lot of kids, let's say, who grew up with a very indoctrined kind of religion and feel like, man, the first thing I couldn't wait to do is to get away from that. But at least for me, without that, it definitely left me feeling kind of like that existential atom floated, free floating in the universe, and just searching for some kind of sense of something deeper than just the material surface of life, and some kind of connection beyond, you know, each isolated individual making their money, making their name. I just, it did leave me really hungry to find, to scratch deeper and dig deeper and find something, you know, of more enduring value than just my 70, 80 years on this planet, 120 years, God willing, whatever it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. You have a sister, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I would assume...
And a brother.
A sister and a brother. Okay. Now, I would assume that your sister and brother were raised pretty much in the same environment that you were. Would that be a correct assumption?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, what do you attribute? Why is it that you think that you had this spiritual journey and awakening and they didn't?
I don't know. I ask myself that often, you know, about them or about friends, you know, from high school or college or whatever. There was just this, I call it in my book, this little bed bug, you know, this little itchy voice that just wouldn't leave me alone, that just, you know, kept nudging me and pushing me and saying, there's got to be more. There's got to be more. You've got to keep looking. I don't know. It's just one of those things, you know. My sister has actually become more traditional than my household, but certainly not to the extent that I have. I mean, I didn't mention this, but I'm a, you know, full-fledged observant Jew at this point in my life, which was not at all the way I was raised. I didn't know the Jews believed in God. That's how untraditional my upbringing was. I don't know.
Okay,
fair
enough.
Okay, it's just something compelling that was part of me from early on.
Okay. Now, so you had somewhat of a journey in coming, like, back to first. You started out being raised Jewish and wound up now you're a religious Jewish person. But in the middle, you checked out other forms of spirituality. What led you to them? And, or maybe the question is, why didn't you go straight to Judaism?
Okay. The Judaism that I grew up with was very cultural, very intellectual. But like I said, I didn't know Jews believed in God, and I never heard the word spiritual really, in any way that meant anything to me until I kind of encountered hippies and counterculture, you know, people. To me, Judaism was a certain drive, a certain intellectualism, a certain something that I just couldn't put my finger on and define. It just so happened without consciously choosing that a large percentage of my friends always seemed to be Jewish, but it was nostalgia. My grandparents' home, there was Yiddish music, Yiddish culture, Yiddish songs, but it all just either seemed like nostalgic or very intellectual, maybe a little neurotic. It did not at all, it seemed to address what this spiritual hunger, this kind of search for something mystical, something, you know, deeper. And the only people that I knew that were talking that language were hippies, most of them Jewish, probably who I first encountered at Camp Tamarack. Other people, sometimes a few years older than me, who were a little bit farther ahead, who were, you know, into Zen or into Buddhism. Well, that is Buddhism, or into meditation or macrobiotics or, you know, various forms of Hindu belief and practice. And that just seemed really cool and really enticing and really different than anything I found, you know, going to Northland on the weekend or going to the temple or, you know, anything like that. So it just seemed very enticing and like something really mystical and spiritual and different.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were led into what my grandmother was very astute and saw. She had 17 or 18 grandchildren who are still all alive, thank you, and saw them all going off into their ways. And she referred to it in Yiddish as being part of the unwashed masses, basically. They're going to go join the unwashed masses. You know, so did you have any harrowing experiences in your journey in quest for spirituality?
Yeah. There's one that I describe in my book. I mean, thank God. I really say that I was that God protects innocents and fools. And I have drawn on that way too heavily because I definitely put myself into what could have truly been dangerous or harrowing experiences. And only through Mamble, you know, that I just kind of bumbled through them and came out pretty unscathed on the other end. But at one point, I just got this bug in my head that I had to go my hiking on the Appalachian Trail and the Smoky Mountains by myself. And this was, of course, pre-cell phone. So my father was just reminding me about this the other day. I, you know, got down there, went on the Appalachian Trail, hiked for, I don't know, a few days, whatever it was, a week, came back home. He says, I sort of had forgotten. I called him from some gas station somewhere asking him to wire me $50 because I was out of money. And another time I traveled with a friend who was a little bit more older and more confident and like a real, you know, free spirit. And we decided to travel throughout the West by pendulum. Swing the pendulum, whichever way it went, that's where we would go. And we felt we were following the divine flow and the divine spirit. So it's kind of exciting looking it back. A bit of a mashugana, as they say, a little crazy. But whatever. Thank God. And the worst of the wear, here I am.
Right. And you didn't wind up in any hospitals or jails.
No, didn't. I do remember wandering around in San Francisco once and having some, I'm quite sure, Moonies approach me. And even though I was very open and looking for community and looking for, they came up to me and said, oh, we have a community, all these loving people. And some little bell in the back of my head went, Moonies, Moonies, Moonies. And I said, leave me alone. So once in a while, a little common sense surfaced.
Yes. My mother was very liberal about what we were getting ourselves into. And her one piece of advice was, just don't call me from jail. So, and thank God we all at least adhere to that piece of advice. At what point, where were you? What were you doing when you had this epiphany that there is this God entity in Judaism and tradition and doing mitzvahs and acting something that would others would consider a throwback to an ancestral time, Miriam Karp?
Right. Well, as my mother had said at some point down the road, I'll get into that, she said. On one hand, I finally agreed to go shopping with her at Hudson's and buy normal clothes instead of, you know, Salvation Army patched whatevers. And she was like, someone must have brainwashed you to get you out of those raggy jeans. So anyways, it was definitely from my family's point of view, on one hand, she's normal and she speaks a little Yiddish now, but what happened? At any rate, I was in Ann Arbor. I had been kind of in and out of school. I was in art school at that point and, searching was really the driving force in my life in a very serious way. I just felt there was some path, some way of connecting to God that I was just looking for, both within the university and outside of the university, trying to study Jung and different aspects of psychology, trying to find what is a soul, what is consciousness, what is that indefinable thing that just seems so important. And one night, I just had a dream, and it was very strange because it was not something that was part of my, you know, something that I was familiar with, that I thought about. All of a sudden, I had a dream about my Zadie, who was the kind of Jewish force in our family, and he was in this chain of sages, Jewish sages coming forth from the past. And I don't even think I'd hardly ever seen such a thing as a Jewish sage. I knew about Zen masters and gurus and all kinds of stuff like that. But I just knew these were Jewish sages. And my Zadie was like the most forward, prominent figure in that dream. There was no action. There was no storyline. There was no dialogue. But I just woke up with this very strong feeling that this dream was a message. And I was into my dreams. I used to write them down. I used to think about them. I used to, you know, kind of I never thought about my dreams, but this just hit me as something very powerful, and I knew it had something to do with some kind of chain of Jewishness, and he was the most forward in time and space, meaning the most current member of the chain. And I never thought about Jewish continuity or the chain of Judaism or door of Lador, any of that kind of stuff. But somehow that image, and I knew that it meant something about some kind of chain of Jewish continuity. And I wanted to paint that dream, or I wanted to portray that dream somehow. So I went to my parents' house to look for some Jewish images, and when flipping through a book, a Haggadah, I saw the verse in the middle of the page. It was an illustrated Haggadah by Ben Shannon, those who sow in tears will reap in joy. And it just hit me like, this is the definition of being Jewish. Being Jewish always seemed like special in some undefinable way, but also kind of a pain. Like, they're just always more neurotic and more worried or more loud, or you don't just fit in, or you're not a cheerleader, or you're not cool. Like, there's something very mournful about it. My bubby is always worried about me, but they're sowing tears. There's this tearful aspect of it, but somehow underneath it, there is something very beautiful. There will be a reaping in joy, and that just, like, it just, like, hit me, and I tried to write down the verse and decided that was going to be part of this image of the dream. And through going back to the art school and trying to portray that image, I eventually did meet up with people who introduced me to traditional observant Judaism. And it wasn't an epiphany. It wasn't a process. But reluctantly at first, because I thought these probably are the most backward people on the planet. They're like so old-fashioned, and they're so unhip, and they're so uncool, and they're so nerdy, and they just like seem like, you know, fossils. But there was something there that just was very beautiful and compelling, and I just kind of kept sticking my toe in a little more, kept learning, kept asking, kept, you know, eating challah and coming around on Friday nights, and there was something very deep and authentic there that was just very satisfying and in a way that nothing else that I had tried had been, and I had tried plenty. So
I'd like to talk more, but we're out of time on this segment. I got just one more question for you. You said you have a lot of children. And
yes,
I know that my children are my biggest critics. So I would assume that your kids have read your book. Now, mm-hmm. What percentage would you say did eye rolling, and what percentage would you say said, "Mom, this is really awesome"?
It was fascinating. It is fascinating to see gouge my kids' reaction. And besides the fact that they're excited that their mom wrote a book, I'll tell you the best quote. One of my daughters, who's in her early 20s, you know, who we've always been close with and had a good relationship, she said, "Ma, when I was a teenager, I was always upset because you wouldn't take me to the mall and teach me how to put on makeup and be a normal mother. I'd drop her off at the mall, but I was just never very into that kind of stuff. I guess my hippie thing still never wore off completely. But now I think you're awesome." They really appreciate, they've heard a lot of these stories of my searching and so forth, bits and pieces, but now they really, I think they really are amazed at what it took to undergo such a lifestyle transformation and just the deep searching and not giving up. So it's been very touching and beautiful to have my kids, you know, see it that way.
Terrific, terrific. Okay, our guest has been Miriam Karp, who is known in the Detroit area as Miriam Dreiker Karp. Wrote a book, Painting Zeta's Dream. Now I understand the name of the title, A Memoir of a Searching Soul.
Yeah.
You've got a website, paintingzetasdream.com. How do you spell Zeta?
Zaidy. Apostrophe.
Okay.
There's no apostrophe in the website. So
right.
It's Painting Zaidy's Dream.
Okay. Painting Zeta's
Dream. It's also on Amazon as well.
And it's all in one curve. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you and ask you further questions, they can do that there. We want to thank you so much for coming on and wish you continued success with it.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Fitman. It's really been a pleasure.
Okay. Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial
break,
and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Chiropractic healthcare offers patients the advantage of a safe and natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. People of all ages, including children, benefit from chiropractic's unique approach to health. Call area code 248-557-1818 today to find out how chiropractic can benefit your family. At the Solomon Chiropractic Center, we especially love children. All kids should have their spines checked periodically throughout their crucial growing years. Growth on a crooked foundation will create a crooked spine and become harder to correct later in life. Kids love to get adjusted at the Solomon Chiropractic Center. And hey, moms, did you know that chiropractic offers a safe, drug-free approach to helping with the many pains women often get during and after pregnancy? We even have special tables which open up so pregnant women can lay on their stomachs. We treat moms, dads, children, and grandparents with arthritic pains, neck pains, back pain, and headaches. People of all ages, including kids, benefit from chiropractic. Come experience the natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. Stop living in pain. Call area code 248-557-1818 today for a free consultation at the Solomon Chiropractic Center to discuss you and your family's health needs. Remember, 557-1818. That's 557-HI-HI.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. We have some music for you. This is Benny Friedman's latest song, and this is called Mala Ani. I'm going up. Let's go up with him.
אתם קדושים, אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם מלא מלא אני עליכם, מלא 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 אני כאילו קידשתם עושים, מלא 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 אני מלא מלא אני עליכם, מלא 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 אני כאילו קידשתם עושים, מלא 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 אני אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם מלא מלא אני עליכם, מלא 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 אני כאילו קידשתם עושים, מלא 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 אני
אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם קדושים, אם אתם מלא מלא אני עליכם, מלא 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 אני כאילו קידשתם עושים, מלא 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 אני מלא מלא אני עליכם, מלא 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 אני כאילו קידשתם עושים.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Some things are better the way they used to be, like the crisp feel of a cool autumn day, the serenity of a baby sleeping, or the feeling of coming home after a long trip. Franklin Cider Mills makes cider the way cider is supposed to be. Its old-fashioned, clear, crisp taste reminds you of a cool autumn day. Located in the heart of historic Franklin Village at 14 Mile and Franklin Road, Franklin Cider Mill has been making cider the same way for over a century. Always fresh, with no additives or preservatives. You just can't buy Franklin Cider in any supermarket. Franklin Cider Mill is open from Labor Day weekend to after Thanksgiving from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come visit Franklin Cider Mill. It's kind of like coming home.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour, but we got a public service announcement. Let's say that properly. We are now going to present a public service announcement for the good of the community. The Cohen Hadow Center for Judaic Studies and Akiva Hebrew Day School present The Tradition of Innovation in Halacha by Rabbi Asher Lopatin, president of Yeshivat Chovevei Torah Rabbinic School, Thursday, October 10th, 7:30 p.m., at Yeshivat Akiva, which is located on 12 Mile Road. That's like between Evergreen and Lasher. There is no charge for the event. And if you have any questions, well, you can contact the Cohen Hadow Center at Wayne State University. And there's no website or address or email, akiva.org or judaicstudies.wayne.edu. There you go. Those are the two. Is your organization having a function? Is it Jewish? Is it worthy of being mentioned on the airways here for the benefit of the community? Well, I'll be the judge of that. But send it off to rabbifinman.com with, you know, the time and date and who to contact and all that kind of stuff. And if deemed appropriate, we will announce it here free of charge, of course, because it's the nature of a public service announcement. Next up, local, Marty Goodman put together a CD. He is a West Bloomfield person and very involved with the Sarah Tugman Base Chabad. Has a compendium of original music. The CD is called Serve Hashem with Song, which means Serve God with Song. It's available at martygoodman.com. We're going to listen to a piece called Achas. Oh, excuse me. We're not doing that one now. We're doing Hungarian Klezmer Orchestra. Yes, let's listen to this. Bubalichkis. We'll get to Marty soon.
Thank you. Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Finman here. Just got received information that the Detroit Pistons will be playing Maccabi Haifa in an exhibition game on October 8th at the Palace in Auburn Hills. Tickets start at $15. Visit thepalace.net, palacenet.com, or whatever it is, or Ticketmaster for tickets. Okay, back to Marty Goodman, if you could bring that up now. This is Marty Goodman.
Quest of God, only that I shall seek, and that I may dwell in the house of God all the days of my life, to behold the pleasantness of God and to meditate in his sanctuary.
Okay, very interesting CD, the way he does it. Always introduces the words and then sings about them. So, available at martygoodman.com.
Wakashowalti, Awakashowalti, Meyes Hashem. Oh, so Abakesh. Shifty, Beves Hashem. Shifty, beveis Hashem. Call ye me chayai. Lachasos benoam, benoam, benoam. Lachasos benoam, Hashem. Lachasos benoam, benoam, benoam. Lachasos benoam, Hashem. Ulavaker beheikolo, vaker beheikolo. Ulavaker beheikolo. Lachasowalti, showalti, showalti. Awachasowalti, meyes Hashem. Awachashowalti, Awachashowalti, Meyes Hashem. Oh, so Abakesh.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier.
Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. As we said at the onset, there are two portions of the week. There's the portion of Bracha, which is Moses' farewell to the Jewish people and his parting blessings to them. And then, without a hitch, we start right all over again from the very beginning. In the beginning, God said, etc. It's not by chance that there is no gap. It is actually quite obligatory that as soon as we get done, we start all over again. Because the Torah, Judaism, knowledge, does not have a beginning and an end. No one can say, you know that Judaism stuff? I did it. Here it is. It's coming up now. This Shabbos is called Shabbos Bereishis, which is the Bereishis is a portion of the week, meaning Genesis. And it is customary for people to take good resolutions, to make good resolutions, as far as how are they going to increase in their Torah study, whether it be quantitative or qualitative. I have been learning Chumash, the five books of Moses now. This will be 38 years. And it's not the same Chumash every year. And every year I look forward to starting over again because there's always something more. Now you can ask, how is that possible? You read the same book 38 times. It's like, you know how it's going to end, so what's the point? Well, the difference, big difference, is because the divinity, which is found in the Bible, is infinite. And when you think you got it and you scratch off a surface and you're like, wow, I'm at a deeper level now. And then what happens is as you go over it again, you get a little bit deeper. And you can get even more deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And you can see all kinds of insights. It just becomes stupendous. And the expression seriously goes, when it comes to learning the Torah, the more you know, the more you know you don't know. And indeed, a person who says, yeah, I know all about Judaism, doesn't even know how much they don't know. Never much they don't know what they don't know. And this all ties in. How is it we're able to do this? Is because of what's doing at the end. Every single blessing that Moses bestows on the Jewish people is they're all geared towards how are we going to serve God? Reuben is a strength. And what is the strength for? The strength's not for beating up on people. The strength is for serving God. And Judah is a king. And what is the king for? The king is not for being oppressive. The king is for uplifting the servants, the subjects, and bringing them closer to God. And then Levi, the prince, the priests, I'm not going to go through the whole 12, are not there to take advantage of people and overcharge people and get into people's confidences and then do things to them that are heinous. No, the whole purpose is to get them closer to God. And then Zvulun and Yisachar, who had this relationship of a businessman supporting the scholar who supported the businessman, this whole symbiotic relationship between the two. And these blessings that we have, that we've got from the portion of Bracha, propels us into the beginning of the Torah again. We, speaking of propelling, have to be propelled into a commercial break. We'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, It's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Best way, rabbifinman.com, www.rabbifinman.com. You'll find archived editions of the show for about a month or so. Going back, you'll find the E-Parsha, the U-Parsha, the Hasidic U-Story, all different media of yours truly conveying information in hopefully an entertaining way. You'll also find the very, very important donations page. We've already passed the middle of September. We have not paid the piper yet. We are still collecting money. Your helping is definitely helping. So go to the computer right now, rabbifinman.com. Hit the donations page. Click the tab that you like. Don't like any of those numbers. There is an infinite number of numbers, and there is no such thing as a donation which is too small. I received a donation this week, a very sincere donation from a person for a dollar, and I appreciate that that person went to the trouble to give a dollar donation. It's absolutely wonderful. I was very touched. Do it today. Don't like doing internet stuff? I understand credit cards, internet security, that whole business. Send your donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Story is courtesy of one Rabbi Abraham Berkowitz, formerly of Detroit. He was actually a student of mine for about 4 months back in 1989 and went on to become an assistant to the chief rabbi of Russia and is now working for Chabad of Mumbai in New York. Anyway, so he tells a story that he was once in this really far out place. And, you know, Russia is 7 time zones long. And in the community of Kazan, which is in the Muslim Republic of Tatarstan, he met this old Jew. And this Jew is a dentist, and this dentist tells him that he comes to synagogue every single day, doesn't miss it ever. So he says, "What is it that draws you here?" And he said, "I'll tell you. My father was one of the few religious people left in Kazan. And he was a scribe. He was able to make, like, mezuzahs, the scrolls that goes on doors and things like that. And he wanted to keep religiosity in our family. We had to go. There was no schools. I had to go to public school, even on the Sabbath. But he understood that we were living in the situation we're living under communist Russia and told us, our motto was, be Jewish at home, be Russian on the street. Every year, my father would build a sukkah, this hut that we live in during this time, on the back porch. They were fortunate enough that they had lived in a one-family house. Most people in Russia lived in apartment buildings. And this apartment, he liked the sukkah, but he noticed that it would come in and his father would make the kiddush on the wine and people from all over the city would come because it was one of the few sukkahs in the entire city. When his father passed away in 1956, so he took over the house, and he noticed that his father just used these like branches for the roof. And so he went and he had a friend make him a proper aluminum roof for the sukkah. He didn't know any better that you're supposed to have a temporary covering on it. And people would come and every year and he would stew the wine and it became a gathering focal point for Judaism in the city till 1998 when Rabbi Gorelick, a Chabad representative, showed up in Kazan. And he invited this Rabbi Kazan, invited this dentist to his sukkah. And when he came in, he started to cry. And the rabbi asked him, what is moving you so much? And he said, this is the way my father used to do it. And I, out of my ignorance, put a metal roof on top of the sukkah. I see that for 30 years, 40 years, I'm doing it wrong. And he felt very, very bad. And the rabbi assured him that the Almighty loves your sukkah. He He took the roof off of it, of course, but now it's a regular sukkah. That's going to do it for the hour. We thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have. You dance your toes off. It says what you didn't cry on Yom Kippur, you can dance on Simchas Torah. Start off the good year with a Shabbos Brachos and come back again next week. Take care.
Shalom aleinu.